Hello, and welcome to the second Tim Duncan episode of the Hoop Theory Podcast, aka episode 97, which is in honor of him being the first overall pick in the 1997 NBA draft. Recording this one on the evening of Tuesday, August 13th, in the year of our Lord 2024. My name is Logan Wertman, and as usual, I am joined by my patriotic co-host, Jacob Roth. Jacob, how does it feel to be on the Tim Duncan episode?
Feels pretty good. Man that does not get as much love as I think he should because he's just a quieter individual. Kind of like the exact opposite of, honestly, where people put Tim Duncan and where people put Kobe, almost just directly flip them, and that's almost perfect. I feel like that's like a great way to do that. Also, I've been watching old clips of Larry Bird. That dude was really damn good. And sometimes I wonder if even as a Celtics fan, I don't give that man enough love because I just didn't witness it. Like,
yeah,
there's a certain thing that, like, if you didn't witness something, you don't give it enough respect. Like, we can't fully acknowledge Michael Jordan's greatness, but also the 45-year-old dudes that stop watching basketball can't fully understand LeBron's greatness. It's like a similar thing where we're both wearing rose-colored glasses, and the other thing doesn't look as good. Anyway, that was a little rabbit hole. I do feel patriotic wearing my Patriots jersey. Shout out to this jersey's already outdated. This is a Christian Gonzalez jersey, but he switched his number to number 0 after his rookie year.
So, but he's still on the team, though.
Yep. I'm never getting a rookie jersey ever again because, he's very good. He's like probably like a top. He got hurt, so this might be a bit bold. I'm going to wager to say he's a top 5 corner in the NFL. Like, he's good.
And he wears number 0?
Wears 0. It's a new thing.
Oh, okay.
Like, being able to wear 0 is a newer thing in football, like, past 4 or 5 years.
I was just thinking from the standpoint of being a corner. I've only ever seen them have in the 20s and 30s jersey numbers.
Yeah, no, because that's a new thing where defensive linemen, everyone is unlocked number-wise except for offensive linemen are the only ones that are still number-locked. Everyone else is free-balling,
I think. They can go anywhere with
it. There might still be some things that people can't do, but like Teddy Bridgewater was like 55 and he's a quarterback.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I'll double check what his number was, but it was like a crazy number.
Oh, that's funny.
It's saying he wore the number 10, but maybe it was just preseason. I know I've seen a video of him throwing the football wearing like number 50 something. It's like, it's a lineman number. Anyway, but yeah, glad to be here.
Patriotic also used it for Team USA winning gold, which was something that we did not get to in the last episode, which was recorded actually just yesterday from our point of view here on Tuesday. So if you guys have not listened to that episode, go check it out. But it's really like part one of this episode. I don't know if I'll market it like that, but that's essentially what's going on here. Yeah. So we're going to just kind of get into all the topics that we were not able to get to in the last one, since it was a kind of jam-packed episode, to be truthful. But the first thing that I wanted to kind of, I guess, skim over a little bit was alluding back to that last. Actually, I almost forgot that I need to be a good host and plug the stuff that we need to plug at the top of every episode, which is the Patreon and the Buy Me a Coffee, if you would like to support us and help us, you know, make this dream a reality, make this like a job. You guys can go and do that for us at patreon.com/hooptheory or buymeacoffee.com/hooptheory. All our links can also be found in the description of both the show and the episode, wherever you're watching or listening to this. We would also greatly appreciate it if you would rate the show, leave a like or a comment. Of course, be sure to subscribe and follow the feed. And lastly, we would also love it if you sent us something into our mailbag for us to read and react to, basketball related or otherwise. You can send those over to hooptheory.mailbag@gmail.com. And now, without further ado, let's get into what I was just kind of opening up, which was one of the main topics that we talked about last episode. Was one of my favorite things, honestly, that we talked about was the KD Twitter beef, Twitter war. And I totally forgot to bring up my favorite quote. I brought up like that Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
What's that called? Parallel. Yeah. And I was like, that's like not even a tenth as good as this line that I should have quoted from the same guy who said it, D-Line, from the DNVR Nuggets podcast. But he said, I think he made this a tweet also. Paraphrase KD in that Twitter war basically as, shut up and watch us dribble. Because he's basically, the way he's talking to fans is like, you guys shouldn't have opinions, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of a funny twist and reverse on that old, for those who have not heard that quote, some lady news anchor saying that to LeBron, shut up and dribble.
I believe it was, I see her face.
Was it a Fox News person?
It's Megyn Kelly, I think.
Okay, yeah, I think that's a
does
Fox
that sound
News person.
Right?
That does sound familiar, but not totally sure.
Laura Ingraham. That's okay. Who it was.
Yeah, I think I've heard that name also. Was she a Fox News person?
I believe so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there was that quote that was the shut up and dribble, basically. So it was just a funny twist on that to, you know, kind of point out the, I guess, fault in what KD, his viewpoint on where he takes a lot of those Twitter beefs to, or Twitter battles.
At the end, yeah. Like, it's like
at the end.
I don't know if he feels like he's losing, but he's like, this is my kill shot every time.
Mm-hmm.
Still more on KD's side, I think, because I like think that I get where he was coming from a bit, but also I think it's just lame that that's where he drags it every time. But he doesn't mm-hmm. care what I think, so shout out to you, KD, being a dog.
Yeah. Moving on from that into some topics, the main topics that we didn't get to last episode. First, wanted to talk about France a little bit because there's some storylines or some things there that I feel like we haven't really dove into.
But do we want to do that for the gold medal game or now?
No, I think there's some France thoughts that I'd like to talk about before the gold medal game, to be honest. And that is, you know, in the games leading up to the gold medal game, their path was one that was kind of fishy looking. Obviously, there's one that we covered a couple episodes ago now, the end of the group play game against Japan, where they got bailed out on that 3-point call or 3-point foul call. That was an and one to give them a 4-point play to send it
to
overtime.
To send it to OT, yep.
Yeah. Literally, if that play didn't happen, they almost definitely would not have been in the gold medal game because they wouldn't have even been in the tournament to begin with.
Really? That would have knocked them out of the...
If they would have lost to Japan, yeah. Because mm-hmm.
hmm.
they barely snuck in there.
Because then that would have put...
Either Spain or Greece.
Was it Spain, Greece, France, Japan? Was that their four?
I don't know if France got... Did France get in as a top two team in there?
I believe so.
That might have been it. But who was the other team?
I'm looking to make sure.
It was Brazil was also in their group, I believe.
Well, I said, so then...
Right? Wasn't Brazil in their group?
Maybe. Like, Brazil, Japan, and Germany.
So Germany was the top team.
Yeah, Germany was the top in their group. And then they beat Brazil pretty handily. So they probably still would have made it in if Brazil still made it in. So wait, how did three people out of this group make it in? That's confusing to me.
Why? Because there's two teams outside of the top two in each group have to make it in because you need eight.
So
and there's three groups.
Oh, yeah. Yep, I'm tracking.
So France, if they would have been third, I guess they could have still gotten in then. I've heard multiple people say that they wouldn't have been in.
Maybe they wouldn't have mathematically if you look at the bigger picture, but my brain just quickly mathing.
Mm-hmm.
They hypothetically could have, but I don't know.
I guess they were only plus two, but yeah, but I mean, that game would have only been a like couple point victory or a couple point
but
loss,
then that's
you know?
Only against like one another. Like that, like point differential would have only mattered for like the tie break with the other teams in the other groups. I don't know how it would have worked.
Yeah, it would have been their point differential that it would have come down to compared to some of the other teams in the other groups, because South Sudan was a minus 17, Greece was a minus 8, and they didn't. Oh, but they made it in. So Greece made it in. But Spain was also a minus 8. So I guess if they would have been a little bit lower than Spain, potentially, I don't know if that's allowed to get four teams from the same group in. But That could have been how it turned out.
Like the whole group goes?
Yeah, because Spain would have been... If France lost by enough to get them below minus eight, you know, then they would have been below.
Because all these teams had one win in group play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And France would have if they lost to Japan. But then
that also would have put Japan into the mix as a one-win team in group play.
That's true. But they also were a minus 42, so... That's a pretty big hole.
They got blown out by other people. So, no, they wouldn't have been an impact then. But then I also probably wonder if them being that much of a minus would have pulled down France more and how that all would have worked. So, yeah, crazy, crazy deal. But, no, they were the seventh best team at the Olympics.
Wow. That was literally something I was going to bring up.
Like, I'm thinking in my brain, because you go U.S. won.
Yeah. I'll
Germany,
let you do this.
Serbia, I'm not doing an order. I'm just listing teams that I feel better about. U.S., because I don't want to deal with the ranking and then being wrong, whatever. U.S., Germany, Serbia, Australia, Canada. And do I have one more that I... So maybe they're sixth and not seventh.
Mm-hmm. That's where I have them, is fifth or sixth is where I have them.
I have them closer to Spain at seven, at seven than I do... Like, it's like a shelf. Like, mm-hmm. what we've talked about, like, in the Eastern Conference, there's a shelf. We have the Celtics, and then a shelf. Like, it's like a drop. Uh-huh. That's how I feel about, like, U.S., Serbia, Germany, and then there's, like, or U.S., baby shelf, Serbia, Germany, shelf, and then Canada. I don't even know how I'm doing it. That's why I didn't want to rank them, because I knew I'd mix up the order. But, like, France is definitely, I don't put them in the same realm as those top five teams. Like, if they had to play, especially how they were playing at the Olympics, in a vacuum, I do not believe this way, but with how dookie shoes they looked in the Olympics, like, they were bad.
In the group play, for sure.
The fact they ended up with a silver is almost criminal.
Yeah, it really is.
I would argue that even in the quarterfinals against Canada, they just, like, they played better, but it was just kind of, like, just a weird game from Canada. I didn't feel like it was, like, Canada's best foot forward. And then against Germany, I also felt like it was this just weird, like...
Germany falling apart a little bit.
Like, and I blew up on Franz in the first part of the episode, like, the one that was recorded yesterday. But, like, it just... They didn't feel like they caught the best of anybody, and so they're, like... 70% of what you think they could be was enough, which is more of a testament to how good Wemby and French legend Yabo Ubusele is now, because geez Louise, he's going to get an NBA deal. There's no way.
Yeah, honestly, he very well could.
Other than, like, he doesn't... He's kind of like a Dylan Brooks in terms of the, like, on an NBA court, if he, like, feels that confident, you don't feel great. Like, you don't want him to try to do that all the time. Yeah. He's like a guy you feel great coming off the bench, being that offensive piece. But, like, defensively, he's not bad. But defense looked a lot better because of FIBA rules. Like, everybody, like, thinking he's this, like, oh my, is that, like, the best, like, small forward we've ever seen? No, it's FIBA rules. Like, he's good, but he's not, like, he's not an NBA starter. And I don't even think he's, like, an NBA playoff rotation guy. He's maybe on the edge of that if you're a bad playoff team. But
yeah.
With that being said, Yabo, come home. The Celtics weren't wrong. They were just early. We love you.
Yeah, no, he looks good, especially in FIBA play. But
somebody called him Beignet Wallace.
Beignet Wallace? Because of his hair? Is that why?
Because of the hair and just kind of the...
And is beignet like a French version of
French
Ben?
A French word. I think it's just a word.
Oh. Okay, nice. That's funny. But I did want to go back to the ranking of the teams, because I kind of made those tiers.
Oh, you built an actual list.
Yeah. So I had USA a solid number one, obviously. Two through four was a big toss-up for me. I could go really in any order, but I had that as Canada, Germany, and Serbia.
Yep.
And then five and six I had on the same tier together, which was France and Australia. I could have gone either way with them, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next shelf after that was Spain and Greece at seven and eight. And then Greece, I feel like somebody could make the argument them being a little bit higher just because of Giannis. But
yes, but like they are so bad around him.
Yeah, they like, really were.
To the max, like, so bad around him.
Mm-hmm. Just not enough shooting at all.
Like, they need one more guy. They just need one guy in Athens just be like, I'm putting up buckets. Giannis, hold on, I'm coming. Give him, like, four more years, one more Olympics. Just one guy that can shoot, so when the entire team crashes down on Giannis, there's this little kid with Opolis at the end of his last name that can hit threes. That's all they need, and they would be infinitely scarier because of how insane Giannis is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for sure. So, yeah, I had them at 8, but, yeah, I could go either way with them in Spain. And then the next tier was the hardest one for me, is like all the bottom teams. I could go in most orders. I feel like South Sudan, I felt the best with just how they performed being the top of this shelf at 9.
They were in a brutal group. I think in a different group, there's a world that they are in the turn of the play mm-hmm. in, not the play in, the tournament part, the elimination, the quarterfinals. Like,
exactly. Yeah.
I mean, if you get in the softball group about France that we just talked about, replace South Sudan with France. So it's Brazil, Japan, and Germany in South Sudan. Considering that South Sudan had to play like two of the best teams in the tournament
mm-hmm.
and then like did pretty okay. Like those are the only losses they had. They didn't look great in those games, but like they did fine.
They fought down to the wire in both of them. You know, so.
Yeah.
Or well, the USA one was like a 20-point.
They
game,
didn't Puerto Rico by any means.
Yeah.
Which, mm-hmm. why were they there is what that felt like. That's like, I know why they were there, but it was just ugly.
Yeah. That's something that I thought was interesting, though, too, watching, like, there's only 12 countries that get to be represented here, and one of them isn't even a country, Puerto Rico, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was kind of interesting. It's like, why don't we get more of a, because, you know, they have voted multiple times, I believe, that they want to become a state of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with it if it's like a, you know, a big selection of countries, but like when it's taking a spot from like Argentina, you know, or something like that, seems like a little interesting. But that's just me.
There's like a lot of those. Because like the British Virgin Islands is its own thing.
Really? I didn't know that.
Hong Kong is its own thing.
Well, they actually do, like, the people in Hong Kong are, their government is autonomous.
American Samoa gets to be its own thing.
Really? I didn't realize that. That's interesting.
There's other ones. I know I'm missing. The British have a couple of them, where, like, their flag is, like, Australia's flag, where it's, like, the British flag in the corner, then something else. There's, like, a couple of those.
Mm-hmm. You're saying, though, that a lot of those are like current British territories, like the British Virgin Islands. They have athletes.
I don't think the list is like super extensive, but Puerto Rico is by far not the only one.
Yeah.
There's like a handful at the minimum.
Mm-hmm. But France doesn't seem to do that at all. They seem to go the opposite way with like
they
French
pull
Guyana.
Everybody in. Yeah.
And everybody goes to represent France. But yeah, so they, you know, had some home cooking. You could say, with them making it to the gold medal game. You know, I think the atmosphere did help a lot, having the crazy home crowd.
That every one of their games felt like an NBA home game.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, I think that, like, even more exacerbated in that gold medal game, which we'll talk about later, but it felt like, I mean, everybody wanted Team USA to lose, I think. That wasn't, like, there actively for the U.S.
Yeah,
like, that's probably pretty safe to say.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was pretty raucous in there, which cool. It's cool to see.
Mm-hmm.
Not enough people care about basketball on the internet, like across the world, to like have real like legitimate crowds for those type of events. I think that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, for sure. And especially since I think this is the first time since the U.S. hosted the Olympics that the host country was competing in the gold medal game for the basketball tournament.
Since Atlanta, I think.
Was it Atlanta?
I think it was the first time that a host nation had medaled since the U.S. in Atlanta or something like that.
What year was Atlanta? Was that 04?
96.
Oh, 96. And L.A. was 84?
That sounds right.
or 80, either 80 or 84, I think.
Somewhere in that ballpark. I think it was the 80s because then Salt Lake City was the winter, and that was either late 90s or early 2000s. But I'm pretty sure it was Sydney in 2000, Athens in 04, Beijing in 08. Blah, blah, blah. Doesn't matter after that point.
Athens 04. Yeah.
I think it was Athens 04 because I'm pretty sure the...
Maybe I'm thinking of Athens, Georgia. That's why I'm confusing this.
I just know that like the there's like the, them wearing the wreaths and like I just remember Argentina's team wearing like the whole Greek garb. They gave them these little olive branch.
You remember watching the 04 Olympics?
No, just videos after the fact.
Gotcha. I wasn't sure if we were getting a peek into one of Jacob's core memories.
No, I don't got very many core memories like that. 6-year-old
Jacob. Or 5-year-old.
Yeah. Also, during the Summer Olympics, we'd both be... Wouldn't you have been 5'2" because of the timing of the Olympics?
If it was before my birthday, then yeah.
Well, that's what I'm like. Yeah, it doesn't... Yeah,
which
yeah,
is
but,
Anthony Edwards' birthday, August 5th. Oh, fun. 5th.
Happy birthday to Ant recently.
Mm-hmm. He turned 23, I believe. But yeah, so the French thing, though, that I wanted to bring up... I put them on the shelf at like 5 or 6, could go either way with them in Australia. But the main thing that I wanted to kind of have a section here about was the Gobert benching. That's kind of where the turning point came. Like how we've been talking about how we feel like they weren't quite as good as some of the other teams here. They did start playing quite a bit better as soon as they switched that lineup around where they weren't having Gobert in the starting lineup anymore. With Wemby, because obviously there's some problems offensively when you have Gobert and Wemby on the court
especially
together.
Especially with how the French head coach wants to use Wemby. I think that's like the best place to use him, obviously. I don't think it's wrong. But like Wemby has a skill set you could like try to do some other stuff with him. But in the way they were trying to use them both, it was not good at all.
Yeah, their offense while Gobert was in the starting lineup was basically just Wemby creating shots in ISO, and it was like, are we really just going to do this all game? It's going to be, you know, that's why I feel like he was playing very inefficiently in terms of his shooting, was because there was just no spacing, and every time down it was basically like, all right, Wemby, you do something with the ball. But once I honestly, the other changes outside of just Gobert, I think were also pretty key, which often go unnoticed, but like putting in Cordonnier into the starting lineup as well, who was shooting the ball really well.
Especially during those Olympics. Last couple of games.
Yeah.
Like the moments, the minutes he was getting before Gobert got benched, like when he was only coming off the bench, it was fine, but like he rose to the occasion when he got the starting spot.
Mm-hmm.
From the very minimal amount of France I watched. I didn't super intently watch French games at all.
Mm-hmm. And then Yabusele being able to space and stretch the floor out there kind of in place of Gobert in the starting lineup, you know. So, like, in a way, I feel like it's just another chapter in, like, this kind of sad story that is Rudy Gobert's story.
Does Rudy Gobert stop playing basketball for LeBron?
Before LeBron.
Does he just get so disheartened by, like, his team being better when he's not there in every situation except for when the T-Wolves play Jokic that, does he just get sad and give up?
Hopefully not. I'm not, like, it's weird. I feel like I don't even like Gobert, but yet I am one of the biggest Gobert fans in the world just by default because everybody hates him.
Yeah, because you can blind, like, you don't have to be super big brain to see the value of what he brings to the table at all.
And it's just a weird thing that a pattern that keeps continuing. Yeah. And like, I think that it's an extra weird scenario where you have this giant, you know, 7-4 player that obviously would be best utilized with like a multitude of space or at least as much space as possible, especially on a team that doesn't have a lot of space to work with to start with. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Having Gobert, who is a complete non-shooter,
is a freebie for the paint, the defense to just black hole to the rim.
It kind of makes Gobert redundant when you have Wemby, because Wemby can do all of the things that Gobert is there for, and then also he can run your offense. You know what I mean? So then it's like, just play Wemby and not Gobert then. Like, in reality, if it wasn't nation on nation, you know, players playing for their home nation, the thing would be, oh, trade Gobert to a team where he's more useful, because it's just a bad fit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously they can't do that because that's not the way that works. But it's just kind of, it's unfortunate. I feel like I'm constantly kind of in the defense of Gobert when I really don't even want to be most of the time, because he makes it a little hard to root for him at times. But I still feel like there's just some interesting wrinkles with how his the pattern of his team's better without him, you know, it seems to go.
Regularly. Regularly.
In Utah, I really think it was all because the way they decided to build their team around him, it made them very singular and one-dimensional, where their whole defense is predicated on funneling everything to him at the rim. And so that means you don't sign any good perimeter defenders. You only sign shooters and, you know, prioritize other things. And then also your perimeter defenders that you do have are just trained over the years to let guys blow past them.
Honestly, Luka and Rudy would be a menace, because Luka just does that anyway. Doesn't even try. It just happens.
But then what was shown to be the clear downside or clear issue with that structure is what happens when you're going against a team that is spaced five out, where Gobert has to guard a shooter.
Yeah. No.
So then teams playing them in the playoffs would just use those, even if it wasn't their best five players, they would just sub in five shooters, you know?
He is the best bad NBA player possible, because he's not bad. He's very elite at what he does. But in today's NBA, teams can just turn off his value.
It's because of how reliant his team is on him also, though. You know what I mean? Like, with the Wolves, you don't see it near as bad because they're a good defense. They actually have a good defense around. So if it's not near as beneficial for them to try go five out and pull Gobert, because then you still have...
Because
then you still have Kat, you still have Jaden McDaniels, you still have Na, you still have Ant, all playing perimeter defense, locking things up. It's not like an easy run to the rim layup line.
It's not free.
Yeah. Which it was in Utah, because that's literally the plan they had to make the roster was to do that. So it was just kind of a pretty major oversight looking back. That really tanked his value to a lot of spectators across the league, because it was like, he's getting paid max money and he can't even be on the floor right now.
It does feel insane that he's getting paid max. That feels... That part of it does feel incorrect. That feels wrong.
Yeah, and he got traded for five first-round picks and Walker Kessler and a bunch of other good player, young assets.
Walker Kessler was a T-Wolf?
He was drafted to the T-Wolves, but he never played for them. Because he was essentially the sixth first-round pick in that trade.
That's got to feel really bad. In hindsight now, I didn't realize that.
You did at one point. You for sure did. But because, you know, remember the memes of after Gobert punched Kyle Anderson, where people were sharing the memes of Walker Kessler, showing his stats compared to Gobert's on the season. And at the end, it said teammates punched zero. Because they were traded for one another.
Walker Kessler does not punch just people.
And he was one tenth basically of that trade. And it was they're pretty comparable right now in their value.
And one isn't a max contract.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when you factor that in. But Jared Vanderbilt was also a player in that trade.
Oh, that one hurts. I love Vando.
Yeah. So pretty rough, but it did help the Timberwolves defeat their arch rival or nemesis, or the bane of their existence, you know? The Denver Nuggets. That was their ultimate goal. So they did accomplish that. I guess that's just what I wanted to... Oh, also, the other funny thing about the Gobert situation is how it was announced that he was being pulled out of the lineup was there was talks of this injury, this finger injury that he had.
Rudy Gobert said he had finger surgery.
Yeah, and which he said he had finger surgery. Do you want to continue with that?
No, I just love this story so much. It makes me laugh.
Yeah. And then his coach later in the press conference told basically was no, he didn't have finger surgery.
Nope, that's not the case. He just got benched.
And he got an MRI. He said that the procedure that he had done was an MRI, which, for those who don't know, is very different than a surgery. It's not even close to, that's like what you're doing to diagnose something.
It's like to see if you need surgery.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then his teammates were like, no, he got surgery.
Yeah.
Like after the fact. So it was like this weird, like, did the coach not get the memo that he was supposed to, like, or maybe the coach just hates Rudy Gobert. I have no idea, but it felt weird. It just felt weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially when, like, I get the taking Wemby or taking Gobert out of the lineup because Wemby is Wemby. I understand that and like prioritizing that fit. But then whenever Wemby's not on the floor, I don't see the reason for not putting him in the game, which is what Vincent Collet, the head coach of France, was doing. You know, like he was putting in just lineups of Yabusele and Matthias Lesor instead, going small, you know. So I didn't understand that. It seemed a little bit weird where it was like, even when Wemby's not in the game, Gobert isn't guaranteed to get on the floor. Like, that seems a little odd. But yeah, that's just the way they decided to go with it. But yeah, I guess sad to Rudy. I feel a little bit bad for him, you know, because everybody just hates him so much. did you see his interaction with Joel Embiid?
No, I did not.
Yeah. So there was like a moment after a play where Embiid kind of like drew a foul or whatever, and he's walking out of bounds right over Gobert, which I thought was a little bit of a dick move where he was kind of stepping over him unnecessarily. But then Gobert, for some reason, his reaction was to lock his arms around Joel's legs, like just like a little child, put his arms around his legs and just hold him there. And then Joel froze and put his hands up and looked down. And, you know, it was like kind of making it obvious to the ref that Gobert was grabbing him. And then Gobert slowly just like kind of unclenched his fists and like held up his hands like he wasn't doing anything. It was just like, man, two guys that are, it's hard to root for having an exchange with one another.
I don't think it's hard to root for Joel Embiid because I don't think he does nasty stuff like that. I think that he's like a troll.
He was the one who kind of start. I think it's really weird that Gobert, that was the place he went to, but I don't understand why Joel Embiid was walking over him to begin with. There was no reason to at all. He's just an
instigator troll.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But like, yeah, I don't put them on the same shelf of unlikable at all to me.
Oh no, I wouldn't either.
Because Joel Embiid, I can't stand him only because of what jersey he puts on every game day. It has nothing else to do with like what he like. There's some people I just like don't like because of like who they are. But if Joel Embiid did not play for the Sixers, I don't think he would bug me as bad.
What about all the quotes that you don't like from him and all the foul baiting that everybody doesn't like from him?
I don't think they would bug me as bad if he didn't like
really.
Like, I don't think I'd like them. I'm not saying I like love Joel Embiid, mm-hmm. but I don't think that it would bug me as bad if he wasn't a Sixer.
That's probably accurate.
Well, the same thing with like Trae Young. Trae Young does a bunch of annoying shit.
Yeah,
but
very much.
It doesn't bug me unless he's playing Boston. I think I've texted you this before. I'm like, man,
one of our earliest clips on TikTok.
Yeah. I was like, I love when Trae Young does this stuff, but when he's doing it to your team, it just gets you mad.
Yep. I believe you said that you wanted to punt him across the room is your quote.
That feels pretty correct. But do we want to, is that good on the France? Do we want to dive into the
bronze medal game? Yeah. To go chronologically, this was the game I woke up for at 3 a.m. Because I was in mountain time. So I woke up at 3 a.m. to watch this game. It was pretty enjoyable, to be honest. Pretty competitive. There were a couple points where it seemed like, oh, this could, you know, slip out of grasp. But for the most part, I was very confident in Serbia. The biggest thing that I regret from the lost episode, which I don't think we've mentioned in this episode yet, but last episode, if you've heard that one, we had to re-record episode 96. But in that original recording, the main thing I felt like was probably the crux or the biggest meaty point, you know, of that episode was the back and forth we had about Serbia versus Germany. How, you know, you basically said like, there was one team that you were worried about against the US.
And then changed it to 1.5.
Yeah. And then I said only one team, and you said one and a half, referring to Serbia
as the half.
As the half, yeah. And then I, you know, kind of went into this sentiment about how I was pretty confident in Serbia. I just felt like they had a really good shot at the U.S. from what we had seen so far. And then they went on to almost beat them in that game.
Shoot really, really well.
Mm-hmm. And at points, literally, we were texting. I actually thought Serbia won the game because I was behind by a bit.
And I like kept it kind of vague just to like not mm-hmm. spoil anything. But knowing that Logan started behind me, I was like, well, you're going to love watching this game. And that was it, like halfway through the third quarter when you were like catching up. And I'm like, yeah, you're going to love this. Mm-hmm. I don't, but you're going to love this. And then, yeah.
Yeah. So at one point I was texting and basically behaving as though Serbia won the game because I was like, it was just a formality at that point, but ended up not being. But yeah, so Serbia gave the U.S. the heaviest punch, you know, in this tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad they were able to come away with at least the bronze medal in this one. Yeah, so I guess that was the one clip or one thing that I...
piece that we lost.
Yeah. Yeah. I was the most upset about losing was my warranted confidence in Team Serbia. And then Germany, their counterpart in that argument was the team that they faced for the bronze. Franz Wagner was and Dennis Schroeder, both their best players throughout this tournament, kind of wilted a little bit under the pressure, especially of Avramovich. Avramovich kind of locked the crap out of Dennis Schroeder.
Yeah.
He made him look it like was regular NBA version of Dennis Schroeder. But yeah, so that one was cool to see. The Franz is just, I understand that, you know, you went into the big kind of hammering him last episode. And I've heard some other people kind of share that same thought of that big contract extension that he got being a bit of a mistake now that...
Oh, I'm not that far. I don't think I'm that far.
Oh, like, you think yeah, you like, don't think it's a bad contract?
Like, people said the Jaylen Brown contract was a bad contract, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there has to be, like, a point where, like, he gets this... He's still insanely young. Like, this is his first time to potentially get anything. And I would not be shocked if we... going to next year where I think the Magic will end up like a 4 seed or like they'll be better than people think. Paolo will be the main catalyst of that, but Franz will have an aggressive hand in that. So I don't think that mm-hmm. like I'm that far off of him. But one thing that I don't feel good about in is if it's like a game that means something, especially like clutch moments specifically, I want someone else. I do not want him to be my closing guy, which on the Magic he's not. So that's fine. He doesn't have to be.
Yeah,
so I don't know if I'd go as far as to say it's a mistake, because also Orlando has to think like we're kind of a poorly run organization. We should just be happy with what we have.
Poorly run.
Like if you're bad for that strays. Long with that many, huh?
I said that they're catching unnecessary strays. The front office there.
I don't think it's unnecessary as an overall franchise. If you're that bad for that long, it's not just like.
Are they that bad? They've been to the finals a couple times. As an expansion team?
Like, but then after the Dwight Howard run...
Yeah.
Has there been any hope?
I mean, they've been in the playoffs a little bit. But it's like... I mean, they're also just a... They're not
That's
the worst
not, like,
team.
That's not, bad to you?
Being, what, having a few, like, handful, like, 5 or 6 playoff series or playoff... appearances in 12 years or so. It's not terrible. It's not the worst. Like, I mean, I feel like every stretch, also the current front office there is not the same people that oversaw.
That's why I said like the franchise, like as an entity.
Yeah.
Like it's the same thing as like in football, the Cardinals have had a couple good years, but they've been kind of just bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I was just reacting to the poorly run, phrase.
When there's like enough like people that rotate through and the common denominator is like just like the owner, like you're doing something wrong. Like you can be bad at being an owner.
Yeah, but I'd say in the recent years with their current front office, I feel like they've made really
improved.
Good moves. Yeah. They got rid of Steve Clifford finally and They have really invested in like this youth movement that is seeming to be one of the brightest of the NBA.
One of the, yes, yeah. I concur. But yeah, I didn't think that it was a hot take to say that the Magic are kind of a, like, a not exactly ideally run. I just, yeah, anyway, we don't need to keep continuing down this because we don't need this episode to be very long, but I don't think it was a bad contract necessarily. I just don't have, like, I don't want him to be my clutch time option at all. Mm-hmm. Like, almost bench him borderline during clutch minutes.
Yeah, see, I feel like that's a bit of a, just, I think that, you know, there's definitely some bad signs from, like, the most recent big moments. But, I mean, just last year in the FIBA World Cup, you know, he put the team on his back and delivered in big, I mean, they won gold, you know, and he was like
a big part of it.
I think might have been their best player. A lot of people probably would say Dennis Schroeder was.
Him or Schroeder.
Yeah.
It was like a 1A, 1B mm-hmm. at the minimum, at the worst, if it's not a, for Franz at the worst, if it's not a just him being number one with Schroeder at two. But
yeah. So that's something that I feel like I still am a little bit higher on Franz, and I think most of the consensus is at the moment. But and then Daniel Theis also had a really big Olympics, plays very well for his motherland in nation on nation play. But you know, it's just, it seemed like Serbia definitely won the energy battle in this one, was the main key, to be honest. They kind of came in with the fear of not wanting to, you know, go down in a way that was like, oh, we gave the U.S. our best shot, and now we're just out.
We're just out.
Yeah. They wanted to make sure they came in with that same intensity, that same energy that they had going against the U.S., and they delivered pretty similarly for the most part. They didn't shoot quite as well, but they defended the heck out of the game the same type of way. So it was good to see that. And Jokic ended up with his first triple-double in the Olympics, which is the fifth one in the history of the Olympics, the fourth one being from LeBron James just 2 days before in that Serbia-US game. But Jokic actually ended up with, so he had that one triple-double. It was 19 points, 12 rebounds, 11 assists. But he also had those two Sombor doubles that I mentioned in the last episode, and that was in seven games. So he basically, he was very close to having three triple-doubles in seven games in the Olympics. Which was, would have been a pretty major feat. I think both of them, he probably could have got the triple-double, but one of them for sure, he sat the entire fourth quarter. That was the Puerto Rico game. And I think that was also the game where he, on what would have been his 10th assist, Petrushev like blew a layup in transition. So it was like that close to happening. And he would have had multiple in this stretch then at that point. But yeah, so those are my thoughts for the most part on the bronze game. I'm good to move on to the gold if you are, sir.
Yeah.
That game obviously was France versus USA. France came away with the silver medal here. And honestly, they put up a pretty good fight. Like, it was a lot better of a game than I was anticipating. I thought it was going to be a bit of a beatdown.
The only reason that I felt like it was close is because, like, it seemed like France wanted it and the US didn't act like they wanted it unless you were Steph, Ant, or LeBron. Until like quarter two and a half, like it didn't feel like the U.S. woke up right away. It's like they just didn't want it as bad. It was a weird thing to watch. Like obviously Steph and I think LeBron and I think Ant were all like off the rip, awake, ready to go. And I can't think of a better term than awake. But the other guys, like I mean Jason Tatum, I thought like he looked like he just didn't want to be there, which was confusing to me. But
yeah.
It was just a weird thing.
His minutes, honestly, they felt a little bit like sympathy. Not sympathy. I don't want to say that because that's a quote from other people that I heard say that. And I don't really fully agree with that.
I don't think he's been, ever since that DNP, he's been like out of it. Like it doesn't, and I don't think that he was.
I mean, he was like, making some decent reads and stuff like that, but he just wasn't really playing hard. You know, he wasn't like
it going. It was weird. It didn't feel like I was watching Jason Tatum play basketball. It felt weird because mm-hmm. that's like the like Jason Tatum is usually like not like the hustle superstar, but like he does those type of like things a lot of the time and cares and gets into it despite his status of what he is on the team for the Celtics, you know? So mm-hmm. it just felt weird to see him kind of like lethargic about stuff. And I don't know if that's because behind closed doors there was some sort of something between him and Kerr, and we'll know if he has a 50-burger on the Warriors. That'll probably, I'll treat that as my answer if he has issues with Steve Kerr or not. Or if he plays all 48 minutes, like the first time they play the Warriors, he'll be like, okay, okay, guy.
Yeah.
Which I doubt any of that'll happen because I don't think that's in either of their, in Jason Tatum's spirit necessarily to.
Maybe the 50 piece, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could see that.
It just was weird, but he's not the only one. I just like am acknowledging that he definitely looked like he was not like he cared, but it looks like he just was kind of like going through it.
Yeah, he didn't play super well in the stretches that he had in the Olympics.
I think that's the only bad, like outright bad stretches he had was that game. Obviously, he didn't shoot great the entire Olympics, but doing everything else.
Did he make a single three?
I don't know if he made a three, but I also don't think he shot a ton of them, but I could be wrong on that.
Yeah, and I know that he was very reluctant to shoot. So that, I mean, in effect is kind of making him a non-shooter, you know? And so that's taking away the value of having his spacing out there, which is something that this team really needs, like every USA team does, because, you know, you have some of the best players in the world, but you don't necessarily have a lot of spot-up shooters. Which is important, obviously, when you're trying to form a good offense. But Booker was, you know, his counterpart.
I just was looking at he didn't make a three at the Olympics, I don't think.
Yeah.
But Booker was, I mean, he
shot like 60% from,
especially in this game, in this France game, he shot really, really well. He shot really, really well all Olympics, but he shot really, really well in that France game. So yeah, it was just
I noticed he was like a double digit scorer at one point, but
The Serbia game, he didn't shoot well. The France game, he shot really, really well. I had my games mixed.
Not shoot well in the Serbia game.
He was like 1-for-7 until the very end of the game where he hit like 1-3.
He was 2-for-4 in the Serbia game.
Maybe I'm mixing up my games then. I must be.
Yeah, he was 2-for-4 from the field. I believe he only took, I don't even know if he took a three, to be honest. I think he had a layup and then he made a free throw. So he's 1-of-2 from the free throw line, I'm pretty sure. And then he would have made a three to make it 6. Yeah, so I'm pretty sure he had 6 points. But my point was that he, in the Serbia game, I thought he was one of the major reasons we won that game. And then in the France game, he like shot well and had like double-digit points, but that I didn't think he was near as big of a contributor. I thought there were like multiple possessions or multiple points where it was like, oh, that wasn't a great decision. Like he had multiple points in the first half where he made bigger mistakes than he made in the entirety of the Serbia game. You know what I mean? Like in the Serbia game, he played basically a flawless role player type of game. Like airballed a shot, but like that was.
We said it yesterday that he just had the Derek White game of all games, but just as a better basketball player than Derek White is.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But he didn't really have the ball much. He really did stick in that Derek White type of lane and defended the hell out of the ball. He was pressuring full court, and that was the reason why he was on the floor that entire fourth quarter, closed out the game for the U.S. Like they literally couldn't take him off the floor because of what he was doing to lock up Micić and Avramovic and Bogdanovic, honestly. He was honestly probably the best screen navigator in that game as far as the U.S. guards was concerned. So big props to Booker. I think he was kind of like an unsung hero of this team in a lot of ways.
I think Steve Kerr said that. I think that like one of his big things in the post-game press conference. He's like, Steve Kerr or Devin Booker was like our unsung MVP. I think he might have said those exact words as unsung MVP.
Mm.
So yeah.
Yeah, I agree. But that was my thoughts on that one. And then on the French side, Yabusele and Wemby, they were like the catalyst that made it a close game.
Yeah. They did their best, and there's only so much you can do. And then Steph did what he did at the end, and it was pretty much. Have you heard these French calls?
Oh no, I have not.
After we're done on this episode, you need to go and just look up French translation of the Olympic gold game. They call him like the angel of death. Like, it's it's like, it's crazy.
Yeah, no, that's funny. I will definitely look into that. But Steph, yeah, the major moment that he had at the end of this one was those three threes that just completely put away the game. When it got close, it was like a 2 or 3 point game at one point with like 2 minutes left, something like that.
It's this devil named Curry is hurting us. And then everybody's been making memes like me when I go to an Indian restaurant.
That's funny. But yeah, each one of his threes there at the end got like progressively more insane.
Honestly, I felt like they got progressively more like Steph. Like they just like kept like evolving, like, oh, that's a three that a lot of good shooters hit. And you're like, oh, that's a really good catch and shoot, active off the ball three. And you're like, that's the only shot, that's the only human being that could make that shot that I would feel confident in was that guy. It's Steph Curry. And in the history of the world, that is the only guy that I feel like could do that. Mm-hmm. And he let go of it. I'm like, it's in. Like, mm-hmm. immediately, I was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, it was like fading away against like three defenders.
Anyway, I want to see a different angle. And I don't know. I mean, it's the Olympics. They'll have to have it. I want to see the angle where it's like slow-mo on Curry. And you see all three like defenders like clap their hands where the ball was. Like, yeah. Right at the end. Like, I want to see that slow-mo camera. I know they'd have it if it was NBA Finals game. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people probably know exactly which angle I'm talking about. Where, like, it usually tracks with the ball, but it was, like, three French defenders' hands just all getting to the ball, just, like...
Coming very close.
Oh, but, it was awesome. It was... Yeah. That was a great moment.
Mm-hmm. So, and honestly, that was the best way it could have ended, honestly. Like, from a storybook-wise, like, Steph struggling. I thought the same type of thing with Embiid, how he struggled through most of this tournament, and then... In one of the biggest moments against Serbia, he like put on the hero cape. You know, it's just like the way that story kind of wrote itself was very satisfying in this, the way it could have played out, you know, is one of the best ways it could have played out. Obviously, other than the Tatum detail, that's the one thing that probably we would have hoped it would have been gone a little bit differently. But
but I'm okay with it because. This ready for my hot take? I'll throw it on the pod. I won't even put it in our chat. The Boston Celtics are going to win 70 games. Between the offseason that Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have had, if there's any way that you could prevent a championship slumber coming out of the like into the regular season, I feel like both of them have had things that they will show up game one and they'll like bury the Knicks by 30. They are just going to be just...
Have a chip on their shoulder. Yeah.
Okay. I don't care that we just won. Everyone is still talking. I'm done.
Let's do it again.
If there's any way that it could happen, I feel like this has been the perfect catalyst of that. And I feel like other than not having KP, every other guy will just feed off of those two. Like if they're both in that like killer mode mindset right away, I feel like there's like a world where the Celtics win. Like, no, I'm going to stick with 70. I mean, they almost did it last year. Like it wasn't that far off. They were... Was it two games?
60, I don't remember how many games they won.
Because they ended up, like, hold on, I got to remember.
I think they lost, I think they lost 19 games. So that would have been 63.
That sounds right. So they weren't quite there, but like, I'm just going to ride with my boys. They're going to, there's not going to be like a slumber to start the year. Also, if any coach is going to like bully that out of people, I would have thought it was Mike Malone, but his players don't really... have the, like you talked about it going into this last season after the Nuggets won, like you kind of anticipated there being like a little bit of a slow start to the season just because of who all the guys on the team are. But with this offseason that the Celtics have had, I feel like there's like a chance where either one or both of the Jays just show up ready to just, oh, I'm not good. Am I really not good at basketball?
Yeah.
Really? Is that really what we all think now?
Uh-huh. Like, no, I could see that for sure, honestly.
That's my storybook ending. Is in the like Jason Tatum documentary, the lowest point of his career was this Olympics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which would be an insanely high low, but
Yeah. And to confirm on that, the Boston Celtics did win 64 games last season.
64.
So it was 18 losses.
I know we ended up having to play, we almost won it, like we almost only played 100 games throughout the whole year, like including playoffs, but it ended up being 101.
Because of that beatdown from the hands of the Mavericks.
The hot hands.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that kind of gets into some topics that I wanted to get into with the bigger picture moment of the, you know, the future of Team USA. Some people, I don't know if you've heard this, I'm sure you have, a lot of people saying that Tatum isn't going to be playing in 2028 because of his experience here at this one, and the, you know, rocky waters. But now you said either yesterday or some other time.
Steve Kerr doesn't think, it doesn't seem appear that whether it's because of Steve Kerr wanting to be done or mutual because of how much flack has been taken, Steve Kerr does not seem like he will be the coach. Also, for everyone thinks that Jason Tatum, the only way it happens if Jason Tatum says, I don't want to be back, Grant Hill is a Duke guy.
Yeah.
So for anybody that thinks he won't be invited because of how he performed, you're stupid and dumb. That's insanity. Hey,
he's going to be invited. There's no way he won't be unless this is like the beginning of his Space Jam take away his powers moment. You know what I mean?
No, I don't want his shot to be gone, obviously. But there's a part of me that wants this to be the turn on the Magic Johnson like
point forward.
Yeah, it just would be Ben Simmons or Jason Tatum who ends up closer to Magic Johnson. I think it would be funny if it ends up being
Jason Tatum. That's funny.
But I've got a list. I've got my 12 guys.
Oh, you made a team. All right. I'm
forecasting.
I've got
12 guys.
Yeah.
You ready? Do you want to hear it or how do you want to do it?
I do want to hear it. Yeah.
Okay.
Do you have their ages also?
I don't have ages, but I took those into account when I built it.
Okay. Yeah. Makes sense. I'm sure I'll be able to do the math in my head as you go through them.
So I've got Jalen Brunson.
Okay. He'll be early 30s, I believe.
Tyrese Maxey.
Mm-hmm.
Devin Booker. My glue guy is Suggs. Like one of those like glue type of guys.
Like the Derek
White. And
then
Ant. Yeah. And then Ant, obviously.
Okay. So all
guards
so far. I'm
going to keep my favorite one for last, even though I'm like trying to go guards, forward, centers.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to keep my favorite one for last. Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and Paolo as the other forward. Okay. This assuming that the old guard does not come back at all.
And Paolo continues to play for the U.S. and not for Italy.
Yeah, that would be an issue. But
yeah.
He chose
the U.S., so I would be surprised if he flip-flopped now. But
Chet, Bam, the other glue guys, Walker Kessler filling in the JaVale McGee role. And my favorite one, Cooper Flagg. That's my other one that I put on there.
Yeah, I like it for investing
it'll be,
in the future.
It'll be his fourth year in the league. Like, it won't be, it's like weird now. Because people
it'd be
thought
going
he,
into his fourth year in the league.
Yeah, it'll be going into his fourth year, so he'll be like an established. I mean, he'd be where Paolo's at. No, where Ant's at now. It would have been like the same thing as Ant.
Ish. I think Ant is going into his fifth year now, I want to say.
So right? It would have been Ant last year. Yeah, you're right.
Ant last
but
summer.
Like, people would have put Ant on the Olympic team if they happened last year. I don't
also,
think really.
Also, Cooper Flagg is young for his grade because of how he reclassed. You know,
I still go with Cooper Flagg. I feel like, yes.
Yeah, no,
that's
fine. I was just saying that he's
and
even.
And then I've also got Embiid.
Oh, you do?
As a maybe. I also want AD to be in there, but I don't know if he'll like keep going because he's like a weird age line. I think he'd probably stick around, but I don't know. That was one that I felt weird about. Also, I didn't know where to put Haliburton. That one hurt me. I didn't know what to do with that.
Oh, you didn't even put him on there? Wow.
I didn't have him on there because I didn't know, like, I was like, then maybe I don't do Brunson, I do Haliburton, like projecting into the future, expecting Brunson to not cook. But I also feel like Brunson would get like a, you've been that guy, you probably deserve like a go. I don't know. I don't
know
how they'll do it. It gets tough. Haliburton and Embiid were other guys that I thought of. And I also, like, when I was like really cooking, I even thought like maybe like one of the Thompson twins sneaks in. But then I decided to like, let's stop cooking that hard and projecting too hard because then we get into trouble. But I did intentionally try to build in a couple of like, you're okay if you don't play at all.
Yeah, yeah, the like, Jalen Suggs one like and the Walker Kessler one.
Trying to build a team intentionally. That was like part of my thought process.
Yeah, I like it. I like that team.
And then my mock starting five, I went all in. I was very excited about this.
Give it to me.
My mock starting five was Maxey, Booker, JBJT, and Chet.
I like it. Yeah. That I don't was know where else like, you'd go. I guess maybe Brunson over Maxey.
And then maybe one of the Jays and go like
Paolo,
or there's a lot of ways you could go with it, but I was in the lab cooking with my brother-in-law over the phone, and it was nice. Fun.
Yeah, no, I like it.
Because he was actually the one I was like, AD's got to be on there, and he's a big Lakers guy, and he was like, AD's just in this weird age spot. I'm like, you're right. Like, that's...
Yeah,
like,
he's 31, I believe, right now.
So that puts him at 35, so like probably, but you never know. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, with his injuries, yeah, who knows. Embiid, though, I was very surprised that you had him on there, because it was... Or did you just think of him?
He was on there as my brother-in-law said, and maybe Embiid. And I was like, yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Did you see his quote that was somebody asked him about the 2028 Olympics and he said it might be for Cameroon? Like he said something about how like he might not play for the
US.
That
would be the most Joel Embiid thing ever. That would be, but what would be even funnier is if France or Cameroon was like, no. That would be hysterical. Yeah. If he like puts all his eggs in that basket and they like, instead of being like, this is a great get, we get a great elite player. They just like, we weren't good enough 4 years ago. You got your gold and now, no.
I'm sure over that. There.
Stay on your side.
I'm sure Cameroon would take him back happily.
I'm sure.
But France, I could definitely see that not working. No, I mean, I don't even know if he would want to go to France, to be honest.
And also because there'd be like the whole like, oh no, who will we have replace you?
Yeah.
Oh no! What are we gonna do? Wemby gets to start at center. Oh no!
Yeah. But Cameroon fielding a roster with Embiid and Pascal Siakam honestly wouldn't be
that'd be fun.
Too bad. That would be interesting to see. But yeah, so I like that Embiid you tacked him on there, but I was just kind of surprised because of the uncertainty that seems to be boiling from his comments recently, which I don't know when those comments were made exactly. But there was some time during this Olympic run. At some point, he said something about that. If they're even true at all, I guess. I might just be taking some quotes that were made up online at face value. But if I am, I apologize. But yeah, so kind of going over to the flip side of this, the team that I was paying attention to more, honestly, than the U.S. in this tournament was Team Serbia, as we talked about extensively last episode. But looking at their projected future, I heard somebody say, I think it was Bill Simmons, actually. He said something about how he thought this was Serbia's best chance at an Olympic gold was this year, which I don't know if I agree with that totally because of all of the young, like really good players that aren't even on this team yet that could be in 4 years, like the, Nikola Topic, as well as Nikola Jurišić. And then
Jovic was on the team, but like in an elevated role.
That and him being more healthy, because apparently he was playing with a little bit of an injury and was kind of not in good conditioning as the reason why he didn't play near as much as some people were hoping. But he would be, 25 in 4 years. So that would be like a perfect window for him to turn into something more. But even the guys that were getting big time, like Petrushev, he would be 28 in 4 years. Jokic would be 33. I assume Jokic at 33 is going to be very similar to what Jokic is right now. Bogdanović is the one that maybe could be going slightly downhill because I didn't realize. I thought him and Jokic were the exact same age, but apparently Bogdanović is a little bit older. I think like a year and a half because he's 30.
I also feel like his play style would be more susceptible to aging than Jokic's.
Yeah.
Jokic's would change and like evolve, but like I don't think it would... He would just lean into different parts of his game because athleticism, not that athleticism is a ton of bogeys, but like you're kind of getting what I'm saying, where it's not, it's not like his only thing, but
yeah, no, for sure. Vasa Micic would be 34. Avramovic would also be 34, as well as Dobrić, Milutinov. All those guys would be 34 in 4 years. Marko Guduric would be 33. Marinkovic would be 31. And then another player from the draft, I think I already mentioned, but I'm not sure if I did, Nikola Jurišić, the two mm-hmm. Nikola Serbian point guards that are like 6'6", 6'7", from this draft that just happened. He would be 24 in 4 years. Topić would be 23. So they would have a pretty solid roster to choose from, at least if those players do all decide to play for Team Serbia. And that's not even mentioning Alexei Pokuševski, who played for Team Serbia in one of the showcase games. I'm not sure why he didn't go to the Olympics, but he would got some time in that in the U.S. game, actually, the U.S. showcase game against Serbia. But yeah, so that would be the future of Team Serbia projected forward. Could be, honestly, an even better shot next go-around than they
honestly,
had
I think
this
the
year.
Team that's got to feel the best coming out of the Olympics is France. Like, mm-hmm. it's got to be them being like, yeah. okay.
They got a lot of young guys moving forward also.
A lot of guys, young guys moving forward, and then, like, their guy that they knew was going to be a guy didn't shy away from anything.
Mm-hmm.
And the gold the gold medal match might have been his best game. Like, that he looked huge against a great team.
Yeah, no, for
huge
sure.
Huge isn't good. Not, obviously,
he's always
he's a
huge.
Freak person, but yeah.
Yeah. No, for sure. And then the last thing I wanted to touch on before we get out of here was the MVP award of this tournament.
Was it given to LeBron, correct?
Mm-hmm. Which I think was completely fair, to be totally honest.
His team won gold. He had the triple-double.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, but I guess the case there is to be made for somebody else. I think definitely would be Jokic. Being
yeah, that's the only other person that I feel like is in the... Like, the only way you're not an insano person
mm-hmm.
is if you're like, well, I could see Jokic. And I'm like, yeah, for sure.
It's like taking a different approach to the whole mental exercise of, like, instead of prioritizing the winning team, instead going for the guy that was, like, clearly the carrying force.
Getting rid of him seems, like, bad.
Yeah, uh-huh.
You could also do that with Caboclo. I'm just kidding.
But Jokic just wanted to point out the insane tournament he had while playing injured as well. Led the tourney in points, rebounds, assists, and steals, as well as the player efficiency stat that FIBA uses, which I don't know how they measure it exactly. I think it's somewhat similar to PER, but he led in all five of those categories, which is pretty insane. Like, was honestly somewhat close in blocks, I believe, as well. I think he was like sixth or something like that in blocks. I like imagining the world in which Jokic would lead in all those stats as well as blocks would just be like insane at that point. But yeah, so for all of those reasons, I feel like obviously is like the statistically the most dominant player of the whole tournament and came away with a medal. So it's like pretty good case, you know?
Yeah.
So I'll give him the concession, I guess, or the consolation prize on that award. For all that it's worth. But yeah, that will be it, I guess, for my thoughts thus far through my notes here. I don't know if there was anything else you wanted to tackle before we get on out of here.
No, I think that's a pretty good solid length, a good button-up point of the episode. A lot of stuff for folks to look forward to, including content on patreon.com/hooptheory, where you can support us as we continue this endeavor to keep you enlightened on the world of the National Basketball Association and basketball internationally as well. If you're looking to do that, again, it's patreon.com/hooptheory. You can also find it at buymeacoffee.com/hooptheory. Check out the TikTok, as well as head on over to YouTube, because we're going to do a giveaway at 1,000 subscribers over at the YouTube to give away another jersey, because we just want to, and we'd like to get the TikTok thing. Might shut down, might close down. Head on over to the other platforms. Find us if you like us, because we would love to continue providing you content. And I think I hit everything, Logan. Is there anything else you would like to add?
Just the mailbag would be the last thing.
Oh, man, almost had
to
it.
To touch on. But yeah, that's hooptheory.mailbag@gmail.com. Send your questions or thoughts over to that. We would greatly appreciate that. But yeah, without further ado, stay happy, stay healthy, and we'll talk to you guys next episode.
Peace up, A-Town. I can't believe I've never had that click, or have I, and I just forgot it. Okay, that has to have. My brain doesn't work well enough for me to not have done that before.